Verbally Effective with Ina Esco is an interview-style podcast that intersects art, culture, politics, and entertainment with a Memphis focus. Each week, I'm joined by a featured guest with roots in Memphis. Verbally Effective delves into each guest's personal journey to uncover the incredible stories fueling their purpose, the highs and lows of their pursuits, and how through their passion, they are moving the culture forward. Greetings, greetings, and welcome to another edition of the Verbally Effective Podcast. This is the podcast that intersects art, culture, politics, entertainment with a Memphis focus. I am your host, your double E, Ina Esco, and today I have a good friend with me in the building. She is the executive director of the Memphis Library Foundation. I'm talking about Christine Wine-Rich. Hello, beautiful.
Hello, beautiful.
How are you?
I'm so glad to be with you.
Yes, look, this has been a long time coming, and you are here in the building with me. And let's let the audience know how we work together here with Cossett Library. I'm going to let you... Let you go in on it.
All right, all right. So you are our first and best innovator in residence at the Cossett Library.
Yes.
So we're so pleased that you joined us when Cossett opened last year. And my role is to support you financially as the executive director of the Library Foundation. I tell people it's the best job ever because all I got to do is use other people's money to support amazing things in libraries.
That just sounds like a fun job, Christine.
Best job ever.
Is it really? Like at this point in your life, in your career, is this the best job?
Yes, the best job I've ever had, and probably I expect it to be the best job I ever will have.
Okay.
So I tell people to... This is the last time I'm working for anybody else. I'm in my 50s now.
Okay.
I can see retirement in that window ahead of me. And why would I do anything else but this?
Okay. Well, I love it. And I really appreciate you, Christine, because you have been a big supporter of all of our big ideas that we have. And you have been nothing but supportive in making these dreams come true, right?
Right.
Here at the library. So,
like I said, best job ever.
Best job ever. But we're going to start at the beginning, Christine. Where are you originally from?
Well, you said this podcast was rooted in Memphis, and I'm rooted in Memphis too.
Okay.
I was actually born, not technically Memphis, I was at the Naval Air Base in Millington.
Okay.
Is where I was born. My dad was in the Navy, but my parents both grew up here. My dad is actually an immigrant. He was born in a refugee camp, the son of Holocaust survivors after World War II. But he actually was sponsored by a Memphis family and ended up here. And my mom grew up here, too.
Wow.
So, yeah, I was born here. But when my dad got out of the Navy when I was three, he got a job in Flint, Michigan. So that's where I grew up.
When you were three, you moved to Flint, Michigan. Yeah. So do you remember that transition?
I don't remember moving, but I remember things about the first place, the apartment where we moved in Michigan, and I remember about the winter.
The winter.
Oh, yeah. My father literally picked my little three-year-old body up and stuck me in a snowbank, and I couldn't get out.
Mm.
So I remember, like, he thought it would be fun, but it was terrifying.
Yes.
I had never seen snow like that before.
Wow.
So, yeah, I remember that.
Okay, so what was the young Christine into back over there in Flint, Michigan? What were you crazy about, interested in doing? What did you like to do?
I like to read. I spent time at the library, and I wanted to be a ballerina, so you can see how well those childhood dreams came to fruition.
Okay.
I'm 5 feet tall, by the way.
Okay. So most dancers are a little short,
yeah,
I would say.
Yeah, but they're also not so curvy, let's just say.
Okay, we got some hips around here.
All the curves, all the hourglass.
So did you do dance?
Yes, I did dance. I actually ended up being a part of a professional company, the Flint Ballet Theater.
Oh, wow.
And I danced 6 days a week.
Really?
Yeah, through middle school, I danced 6 days a week. And then my Russian-trained, very kind of militaristic teacher body-shamed me in front of my class.
No.
And I decided to quit cold turkey. My mom made me call her, that teacher, and tell her I wasn't coming back. It was terrifying.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Why did she do that?
I think that, first of all, this is, early 80s, And just the concept of what you could say about a woman's body in general was very different than it is today.
That's true.
But also in dance, I think there is a culture, a toxic mm-hmm. culture around body image. And luckily, I was a strong enough person at 12 or 13 mm-hmm. to be stood up next to another girl who was younger than me with longer legs. You know, we had on the black leotards and the pink tights and all very kind of monochromatic because it was, like I said, very kind of militaristic approach to dance. She stood me up in the middle of the room while all the other dancers were at the bar next to Debbie, who was 2 years younger than me but had long legs and was flat-chested and all of that, and said, "See how Debbie has a dancer's body, and it's unfortunate Christine doesn't have a dancer's body and therefore could never actually be a dancer because she's got such good technique." So,
wow.
And so we stood hip to hip where that black leotard met the pink tights so that you could see that Debbie's legs were, you know, 4 inches higher than mine. Mm-hmm. So she had the dancer's body.
How did that make you feel, Christine?
I mean, you know, well, I'm pretty sure that it didn't help my body image. Mm-hmm. And it's probably been something that I've carried, you know, mm-hmm. throughout my life. It's a thing that women carry anyway. And we have to remind ourselves that fat cells do not equal value.
Okay.
Lack of fat cells do
That's
not equal
true.
Value. But mm-hmm. we all feel it. We put on a few mm-hmm. pounds and suddenly we are seen differently in society and we see ourselves differently. And that's BS.
It is. It is.
Can I say that on this
You
podcast?
Can say that. You can say whatever you would like, Christine. And did that stop you from dancing?
Yes. Yeah, I quit.
Cold turkey. You haven't danced since.
Not in a formal setting. I'll dance all night long.
Okay, okay.
But not in a formal classroom or stage setting, no.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Something you'll never forget.
Formative, for sure.
Very much so. So tell me this. After you graduated high school, what did Christine do?
I went straight to college. I went to a very small liberal arts college in Michigan called Kalamazoo College, and I majored in psychology. I had a rocky road. I didn't really understand why, but I kind of, chaos was a magnet for me. So I had a high school sweetheart who had been my high school sweetheart all the way through and into college, and he's now my ex-husband, by the way.
Okay. And okay.
And he was chaotic, and all of the kind of the people I hung out with were chaotic, and I didn't really understand then why that was. I actually dropped out of undergrad for a year to create some more chaos in my life, work three jobs. And
you were living life, Christine.
Oh, yeah. It was. I'm glad I went through all that now, but man, it was hard at the time.
Yeah.
But man, you really learn who you are in the world.
Yes.
I now kind of know more about why I interacted with the world the way I did, because actually just last year, I was tested and diagnosed with ADHD.
Really?
So I look back at that period of time, and even through law school, I mean, I went to law school after that. I'm very academically intelligent, but I couldn't actually be fully successful to the extent of my intelligence because I couldn't follow through. I didn't understand deadlines. I didn't understand focusing on one thing all day long to get something done. I couldn't do those things.
You were distracted.
I was distracted.
Okay.
And I was also a risk taker.
Yeah.
Because that's I found out another symptom I had no idea, you know, that's a dopamine thing in your brain. Mm-hmm. You're looking for excitement, so you take risks. So
wow, that is interesting. But you did get through law school.
I did. Top third of my class.
Okay. Come on, come on. And so did you start working at a law firm?
Yes. So backing up a moment, I actually got divorced in law school from that high school sweetheart. Okay. And I got pregnant with my oldest son during law school by my best friend from undergrad, who's my current husband.
Look at this now.
So
look at this.
Did I mention chaos was
like a magnet
for me?
Yes.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. So we didn't get married, though, for years. Okay. And yes, I went into law practice. I passed the bar exam really, really easily. So that's one of those examples of things that people look at those kinds of markers and say, well, that person can't have a neurodivergent issue, mm-hmm. they could do that thing. Mm-hmm. But if you're smart enough, you really find workarounds. And
that is true.
Yeah. And I think that people think ADHD is like bouncing off the walls, and that's not it. Not in adults for sure, but even sometimes not in kids. So there was a lot of that kind of stuff going on. And so I started practicing just in a general practice with a baby.
With a newborn single mom. Baby. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
As a single mom. I took one semester, my next to last semester off of law school to have that baby. And then I went back to that last semester.
Back on the track.
Passed the bar exam and started practicing.
And what kind of law did you practice?
The first couple of years, I worked for somebody else in a general practice. Mm-hmm. So mostly what I did was divorce and speeding tickets and things that real people need. Mm-hmm. And then a couple years in, I actually went into partnership with another local lawyer who was, and as far as I know, still is a divorce lawyer in the Southeast Michigan area. And so we had we started a law firm together, and we were together for about 5 years. And talk about a chaotic breakup.
A chaotic breakup mm-hmm. with your partner.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. And then, you know, you handle divorces, so I'm sure you've seen quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I tell my husband that's like our marriage insurance.
Yeah.
Because I know what a bad marriage actually looks like.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So what brought you to Memphis, Christine?
I practiced law for almost 14 years in Michigan. And then we got to a point where we were coming out of the recession, actually. In Michigan, Southeast Michigan especially, being so steeped in the auto industry, I think we were in the recession earlier, like by 2006-07, mm-hmm. and came out later. And so my husband felt like, my husband's a pilot, and he felt like his job was probably at risk because Congress had actually made, and the bankruptcy courts had made GM and Chrysler get rid of all of their corporate jets. Mm-hmm. And my husband's a corporate pilot, not for one of them, but he just felt like there was a lot of pressure from shareholders of companies to get rid of those corporate jets, and so he might lose his job. So he ended up looking for other work and mm-hmm. ended up in the corporate flight department at FedEx. In 2011.
Good old FedEx.
So, yeah, I remember finding out he got this job at FedEx in Memphis, which, I've been coming to Memphis my whole life. I moved to Michigan.
Born here, yeah.
Yeah. And my grandparents, my aunts and uncles, my cousins, everybody mm-hmm. was still here. We've been coming to visit every
like
year
home.
Of my life. Yes. So my mother, I thought this was so ironic. When I told her we were moving to Memphis, she said to me, I can't believe you would take your children away from their grandparents.
Aww.
Now, what did she do?
Oh, wow.
And when she left Memphis, what did she do? She took me away from my grandparents. And then when she came to terms with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when she came to terms with it, she gave me this greeting card that said the words, where you've been is, or where you came from is exactly where you belong, or something mm-hmm. like that. And so she accepted it and accepted that we were taking the grandkids and moving
taking
to Memphis.
Grandbabies. Yeah. You know, she was going to miss her grandbabies, but that's why we got
she
planes.
She knew where they were. She knew exactly where they were.
Exactly. Now, let me ask you this, Christine, because, you know, you would come and visit and it would only be just for a little bit prior to actually moving to Memphis. Mm-hmm. So when you really, you know, planted your roots here, how was that? Going from Michigan down here to Tennessee.
Yeah, so I thought I knew Memphis.
I'm sure.
So you get kind of this false sense of, I know my way around. I know the different neighborhoods. I know people here. I know the culture. You know, we were here on vacation when we were here, so we did all the things. We came downtown. I remember years and years ago going to the pyramid for the big exhibits that they had down there, the wonders exhibits, and going to the forum,
that was
going
the good
to
old
the
days.
Zoo,
yeah.
and just doing all of these different things. So I totally knew Memphis, right? I went to Graceland.
Okay. you went to all the major Memphis spots.
Right. So moving here and moving my family here, raising kids here, you know, Memphis has been so good to us. Mm-hmm. But I also see its challenges through different eyes than someone who's been here all along.
Okay.
You know, sometimes I feel like Memphis is down on itself more than the folks who came here from other places, the Memphians are.
Yes.
And I just feel like I love the grit and grind spirit and all. I mean, I'm from the Detroit area now. Like, that's where I moved from. Grew up in Flint and came here from Detroit. We grit and grind. I get it. But it feels a little bit like we're gritting and grinding for scraps.
Okay.
And I think we deserve nice things.
We do.
Yeah.
We do. We do. Now, Christine, we're going to take a short break and we're going to get into, you know, your entire transition to Memphis, how your career had changed, how your life had changed,
yeah,
and what we are working on today. Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you guys for tuning in. We're going to take a quick break here on Verbally Effective with Christine Weinrich, but we'll be right back. Thanks. Welcome back to the Verbally Effective Podcast. I'm your host, Ina Esco, and today I have with me the Executive Director of the Memphis Library Foundation, Christine Weinrich. Hey, Christine. Hey, Christine. Where we stopped on our last segment was you moving to Memphis,
yep,
hometown.
Yep. That's right.
From Michigan. And practicing law. Did you continue to practice law here in Memphis?
No, ma'am.
No? You
no,
left it alone?
Ma'am. That was the best thing about moving to me. Mm-hmm. I was a good lawyer, but I was not a happy lawyer. Mm. I became a lawyer because I wanted to help people. My undergrad degree was in psychology. I thought about being a clinical psychologist. I just wanted to help people. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, I don't know, that's my brand.
Okay.
I just want to make things better for other people because
awesome.
I think that's why we're here.
Yes.
Just to support each other.
So what did you do, Christine?
So when I first got here, I mean, I was fortunate to have a husband with a good job, so
yes,
I could say, do I really want to practice law? I just networked.
Mm-hmm.
I met with folks, and then they introduced me to more folks, and they introduced me to more folks, because, hey, it's Memphis.
It's Memphis.
What Memphians do.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. It's not like that in Detroit. I love Detroit, by the way.
It wasn't. They're not a big networking city?
I think that there are little bubbles of networks in Detroit, but Detroit is a much bigger, there are just more people.
Mm-hmm.
There's so, it,
it's
Memphis
huge.
Is such a, you know, a big small town mm-hmm. feel. And I mean, can you go anywhere for dinner and not see anyone you know?
That's true.
I went to dinner for 20 years in the Detroit area and maybe would occasionally see someone I knew.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very different. So when I got here, I just started talking to people. Mm-hmm. I talked about whether I could practice the type of law I'd be interested in, like mediation and arbitration and collaborative practice, not litigate and make a living. And the answer was no at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that's changed. I looked at other things I could do with a law degree, like HR or risk management,
mm-hmm.
And thought, well, that'd be punching a time clock. Wouldn't be quite as soul-sucking as what I was doing, but it wasn't going to be fulfilling.
Okay.
And then a friend of mine connected me with a career coach who did some assessment, you know, those tests that you're like, is this a Cosmopolitan mm-hmm. magazine quiz or what is this? It's, you know, you kind of poo-poo it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back to get the results and she said, honey, you should be a nonprofit. And I said,
wow,
you know what? I need to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, this is the South, baby. We give before we eat.
Okay.
You make a living.
Yeah.
This is where you should be.
Wow.
So I started looking for nonprofit jobs.
Mm. You know what? I hear that all the time mm-hmm. about the nonprofit sector. People think mm-hmm. that it won't be profitable, but it can be.
It can be. I mean, the sector has its own culture challenges
mm-hmm.
around the idea that we as nonprofit employees should somehow take part of our pay in the form of satisfaction for mm-hmm. making a difference. But, you know, that does not pay my mortgage or put food on my table.
Right.
So I'm a big proponent of paying nonprofit staff the same way you would if they were running a for-profit business. In
exactly.
fact, in some ways, it's more important. Why wouldn't we pay them more?
Yes.
But at least have parity. So,
yes, and Memphis
yeah.
has quite a few nonprofits
yes.
here.
Lots and lots of nonprofits.
Like hundreds, or is it thousands?
You know, I'm not sure exactly. I'd have to check with my friends at the Tennessee Nonprofit Network
mm-hmm.
And ask the exact number right now.
But it's massive.
But it's a lot.
It's
yes,
a lot.
It is a lot.
What was your first nonprofit role?
I actually got hired in the advancement department of the Southern College of Optometry.
Okay.
Talk about, here's a story. Here's a story. So, my, I, I got hired into fundraising for community engagement at the eye doctor school. I had never had an eye exam. Never. I was 40 years old.
Never.
I had never had an eye exam. So when the vice president for clinical programs met me and found out I had never even had an eye exam, he was like, you can be my secret shopper. Tell them your private pay. They don't know you yet.
Oh, wow.
That was my first eye exam. Mm-hmm. I still go to SEO, by the way. I am a big fan. I'm also a donor still.
My sister used to work there, too.
Oh, really? Yeah. I love it. I love it, love it. Mm-hmm. It's the best job I've ever left. Is okay. That what I always say? It was not easy to get me to leave. Okay. But while I was there... and kind of building a department around grants, community engagement, some things that the college hadn't done before. My dad came into town, my parents came into town, and my dad was asking me about transition lenses, mm-hmm. you know, that get dark in the sun. I'm like, I have a law degree, Dad, not an optometry degree, but I know some people, and guess what? Parents can get free eye exams.
That's so, true, if you work there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So while they were in town, they got their eyes examined.
Okay.
They found a ocular melanoma in my dad that he had no signs of, no symptoms, no nothing. And on a whim, because his daughter, his lawyer daughter, went to work for the eye doctor school, he got an eye exam and they found cancer in his eye.
Isn't that something?
Crazy. The happy ending of that story is because they caught it so early. They did body scans. It had not spread. It hadn't done anything, you know, that would, at the time, put his life in jeopardy. So he was able to be treated. I believe that was 2015, mm-hmm. 2014, or it's 9 or 10 years ago. And he's cancer-free because I happened to work at that. Wow. He wasn't going to get an eye exam. Mm-hmm. Anytime
soon. Something?
So there's a karma. My father, my mom calls me my dad's guardian angel. Mm. When I was in law school, I commuted to law school from the Flint area to my law school about an hour and a half away with the wife of a gastroenterologist who also lived in Flint. And she was in her 40s and decided to go to law school because her kids were growing up. And that gastroenterologist saved my dad's life.
Isn't that something?
Several years later, yeah.
That is amazing.
I'm apparently my father's guardian angel, and that's pretty heavy. But, man, am I glad I've been where I've been
yes.
to be able to.
So you didn't want to leave that job because you loved it, but you did.
I loved it.
I
did leave.
And went?
And went to the Memphis Library Foundation.
Oh, that's
in
how we
2019.
Came to the
yeah.
Memphis Library Foundation
that's
in 2019.
It. Yes, July okay. of 2019. So I started with SEO in April of 2012 and was there for 7 years. Never thought I'd leave. They let me build a department around what I wanted to do. I was happy there. I kind of had capped out. I couldn't build or create anything new there, mm-hmm. but I worked with an amazing team. The pay was fair. The benefits were amazing. You know, it was, like I said, best job I ever left. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that happened was that my predecessor, Diane Halfon at the time, she now changed her name, but she came to me 6 months before she retired in 2018 and said, I'm going to be retiring and I think you should apply. Mm. And I was like, no, I don't need that. No, no.
Mm-hmm. Why were you saying no at first?
Because I was happy where I was.
You were happy.
I was
yeah.
happy where I was. I mean, why leave something, you know? Yeah. I noted my penchant for chaos earlier and mm-hmm. I didn't want any more chaos in my life. You know, mm-hmm. I was in a good place. If a little, I don't want to say it was boring. It certainly wasn't boring because I loved the work, but mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot new that I could create. So,
true.
But that was okay with me at that point. But Diane, you know, said that she thought that it would be a good fit for me, and I poo-pooed it. And months later, another friend of mine within the nonprofit community said one of the board members of the Library Foundation had said something to her over Christmas about it, and she had recommended me.
See, it was all pointing mm-hmm. to you, Christine.
And so then I asked myself, am I now a person who closes doors before I even look through?
Mm. Okay.
So I decided I was not that person yet. I mean, you know, I wasn't 90. I was, what, 40, 7 okay. at the time. So it was time to take a peek through that door. Okay. And I did. And let me tell you, when you interview for a job, when you don't need the job and you're really happy with your current job, you can be yourself. Mm-hmm. You can just be free. You can ask questions. You can approach it like you're looking for a good fit for them and for you.
True.
In a very different way. It was the best job interview I ever had.
Really?
Yeah.
It's just you're being more transparent because mm-hmm. you're so happy over here. Like, why would I come to there? Like, what's going to be different?
Well, and the only reason I would leave is if I had that opportunity to build and create something new. Or take something to the next level or something like that. So mm-hmm. I said in my interview, if you want me to step in and just run the way things are, do not hire me. Mm-hmm. Just don't. Because I don't want it. I won't be happy with it. And you won't be happy with me pushing you to do new things, right?
Right.
So they hired me anyway. And I've been pushing and trying to do new things ever since.
You have been pushing, Christine Weinrich. Now, tell me this, because, you know, the public's perceptions of libraries in general, we think of a lot of books mm-hmm. and, you know, just coming here, reading, being studious. That's not the case in 2024. Tell me how libraries have evolved over the years.
Yeah. You know, I always saw libraries as kind of quiet places of rebellion, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I knew as a kid, my mom was a news reporter, and I knew as a kid. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I knew as a kid that, you know, they didn't reveal their sources, but librarians didn't either. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't get the information about what someone checked out, and they'd go to jail for you. Mm. Librarians are rebels. They're quiet rebels, but they're rebels. They used to be quiet rebels, but they're rebels. Mm. So I always had that admiration. And now, as we've watched libraries evolve, really, it's not just about books. We used to think of them as big buildings with books and maybe some microfiche or something.
Mm. Microfiche, I remember that.
I loved the microfiche, pushing a little button and making it scroll.
I loved it.
Yes. Well, we've come a long way from microfiche, fortunately. Yes. And now all of our libraries have access to other types of information, resources, supports, and just equipment and facilities and inspiration and knowledge from technology to, you know, job resources to, I mean, we're sitting in a library in a podcasting studio.
Yes, we are.
Right?
Boop, boop. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. We've built in Memphis, you know, we've been, just since I've been at the Library Foundation, the Memphis Public Libraries have been called the most innovative public library system in the country by Smithsonian Magazine.
Yes.
You can Google that article. It's out there for mm-hmm. free. And you can learn a bunch of the innovative things we're doing. But we've also won the National Medal for Library Service from the Institute for Museum and Library Service, which is a division of the federal government. And we're the only system in the country that's won that award twice.
Wow.
And you can only win it once every 10 years, even be nominated for it.
Yes.
So here we are in Memphis with this resource. We have 18 locations, all with different types of resources, from the podcasting studio and the cafe here in Cosset to Cloud 901, mm-hmm. the teen tech and art space mm-hmm. That's in the Central Library. It's huge. Oh my gosh, I wish I had had that.
It
when
is.
I
like it. I like Cloud 901.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's amazing. And, you know, kids there, we run a high school level robotics team out mm-hmm. of Cloud 901. The foundation supports them doing that work and traveling and competing just like any other high school robotics team, because mm-hmm. high school robotics is really expensive for a school to offer. Mm-hmm. And when the schools don't have the money to do it, what do you think they cut? I mean, they're going to cut those kinds of things. So we fill that void. Then you've got, you know, our Raleigh branch has a demonstration kitchen. We're about to open the new Orange Mound branch in the old Melrose mm-hmm. High School with a genealogy center.
Amazing.
I mean, yeah, every branch has something unique about it and provides this access to not just books as information and inspiration, but mm-hmm. as hands-on, these hands-on opportunities and folks like yourself mm-hmm. to inspire people, to show people what their life can be mm-hmm. when they might not see that in their own neighborhood or in their own school, because the schools are so strapped, or their neighborhood may be, I know my neighborhood's pretty monolithic, frankly.
Yeah.
So I only see, you know, one type of thing going on around there. And I think every neighborhood has a little bit of that. But you come to the library and everybody can come together.
That's true.
You can just interact with different people. And I'm getting all charged up now. I'll let you talk now.
It's okay. It's okay. We want to hear it, Christine. And for those that don't know, you know, you work with the Memphis Library Foundation.
Yes.
How exactly does that connect to all of the libraries here? Like, yes. What layer is that for all of the 19 libraries that you mentioned?
Yeah, 18.
See, I'm trying to give you guys some more.
Well, we'll take them.
Okay.
So the Memphis Library Foundation is actually a separate nonprofit organization from the library. The library system in Memphis is a division of city government. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that the city's operating budget pays for library operations. So all of the librarians, all of the library staffers are city employees.
Right.
And the, you know, the lights are kept on and the basic building maintenance and all of that stuff is paid through the city's operating budget. But what the city can't really provide through an operating budget that has so many other priorities, and we know in Memphis we need to have other priorities, is all of that enhancement that we've been talking about, all of that programming that's tailored to community needs, all of the resources and equipment and all of the technology. You know, the city is not paying for the podcasting programming, right?
Mm-hmm.
We are, and we're happy to do that. We're thrilled to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because how many podcasts have been produced here by other people other than you? Do you know?
I would say at this point, maybe 15 or more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've got, you know, dozens of people coming here mm-hmm. to create their own podcast where they wouldn't have had those
That's
resources
true.
Otherwise.
For free.
It's all free.
Yes.
I always say when I'm, you know, trying to help people understand why it's important to support these kinds of programs, even when they're tax dollars or certainly supporting library operations, is this stuff's free to you, but it is not free to do.
Okay. It is not. It is not. That is
right?
true.
Yeah.
That is true. And let me ask you this, Christine, mm-hmm. in your role mm-hmm. as the executive director.
Mm-hmm.
So I know it's important. You guys have to get the funding, to source the funding,
mm-hmm.
to support what we're doing here today. Is that a challenging role? Is it, you know, I know you're pitching people often,
yes.
right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Tell me about some of those encounters, good and bad.
Yeah, I think that the one of the constant challenges, even with an otherwise good encounter, is that distinction between the tax dollars that support the library's operations and the private dollars that support, you know, when we label them enhancements, they seem superfluous, frivolous,
mm-hmm.
like they don't matter that much. Well, you know, they're not really the thing that's going to move the needle. We just need the basic library operations, because basic library operations is the vast majority of what supports a library.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we couldn't do what the city does.
Right.
But talking to a donor about the importance of private funding, whether it be from individuals, corporations, or foundations, mm-hmm. and the impact of that can sometimes be a challenge because they need to see it. So what do? We get them in the door.
We give them a tour.
Mm-hmm. If we can get people in the door of the Cossett Library, mm-hmm. they can see that this is not your mama's library.
This is not.
It may have actually been your mama's library, but it's
okay.
not your mama's library.
And that visit can make the difference.
It really can. Yeah. And we have, since Cossett reopened last year. I don't even know how many tours I've given, but mm-hmm. from that we've gotten new board members. We've gotten people engaged in library programs that otherwise wouldn't have come to the library because they didn't think anything was in a library for them. Mm-hmm. And we've gotten new donors.
Yeah.
So that's the power of just getting people kind of to come in and showing them the things that are happening in libraries mm-hmm. now, because the books now, I think, play a supporting role.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you can go to the library and just check out a book for
mm-hmm.
sure. We also have, you know, multiplied our ebook collection,
yes.
Particularly in the pandemic, So there are so many, you know, ebook and Audible books.
Technology has just changed everything.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's all available. But now it can also, those books can also play a supporting role. So if a kid goes to Cloud 901 in the Central Library, for example, because they want to learn how to digitally make a graphic, like a comic book, and there is the equipment and the expertise in Cloud 901 to teach them to do that, and then they want to take a deeper dive, well, we can give them the book about how to do it differently with a different program, you know, different software platform, or we can give them examples of graphic novels that are beyond just that little comic book that they were able to create. So we're using books as an enhancement of the learning, because frankly, just telling kids to come to the library and check out a book, not going to work. Probably
especially
the majority
with
of them.
These phones, these telephones.
Exactly.
Yeah, like,
well,
I don't think so.
We all fall into that, though, right?
We do. Mm-hmm. Now, what has been the most interesting programming that you've seen so far in Memphis?
Wow. There has been so much going on in the libraries in Memphis. So many things in Cloud 901, like virtual reality headsets. We have a drone program over there.
Okay.
We also have the film and video lab there and the recording studio.
Yes, I did a tour over there.
Did you? It's amazing. And, you know, I actually just ran into Janae Kelly, who is now on staff at Cosset, who is kind of our poster child.
Oh, yeah, today.
Yeah. Well, talk about a story of library impact. Janae was a high schooler at White Station High School. She started coming to Cloud 901 because she was interested in maybe trying to check out the video lab. She ended up making some short films in there that consistently placed and did very well in Indie Memphis. She graduated, went off to college, continued her journey. She was an intern in Cloud 901, then became a staffer at Cloud 901. She last year entered a film competition with a film she made there. I mean, all of her films are made in the video lab at Cloud 901. It was a competition out in Seattle. We actually, the foundation actually flew her and her mentor who runs the video lab at the Central Library out to Seattle to go to that competition, and she won it.
Janae got it going on.
And now Janae has been accepted to a master's program in film production at only the number one film school in the country, NYU.
Wow. So she's leaving us.
She is in the fall for
but
a couple
of years.
That's
for a good thing. That's
she is.
I didn't know that.
Well,
that is awesome.
So another staffer outed her to me last week. So she hadn't told people, but it's now public.
News. She's
it
so
is huge.
Humble.
She is. She's amazing.
Oh, wow.
She's going to do great things. But that's the power. That's the impact of a library. She's kind of that poster child.
Yes.
For a kid who came to the library for something to do because she was kind of maybe interested, got inspired, had all the access to all the resources and tools she needed, had a mentor to keep her going, to get her through rough patches, all of that, had private dollars to support not only the creation of her art, but then sending her to that film, you know, that a competition where she could have that experience. Our caveat was she needed to bring that experience back to other kids in Cloud 901 and tell them about it.
That's amazing.
Which she did. She's inspiring more people. And now she's about to go, you know, I don't know, Martin Scorsese has been a professor at NYU. So she's going to be just fine. Janae is going to be just fine. And she has said many times to me before, I would not be who I am without the library.
That's amazing when you hear those words, right?
That's
it just really gives you purpose.
Yes. That's it.
Wow.
I told you earlier, all I ever wanted to do was help people be their best version of themselves
and
support people and, you know, practice a law.
Wow.
Wasn't the same.
Does the law come in handy?
Oh, yeah.
In this role? How so?
I think it comes in handy in multiple different ways. The first thing is that I have learned the art of persuasive communication.
Okay.
So in fundraising, I've used my ability to write persuasively and speak persuasively lots. And to listen and understand the other side of an issue, because as a lawyer, if you don't understand the other side, you will lose. Mm-hmm. Okay. So understanding somebody else's perspective in that way has helped. And then the other part is just really understanding kind of the nuts and bolts of nonprofit and what our legal obligations are, or, you know, how we have to be run and how we have to be transparent, because not $1 in a bank account that says Memphis Library Foundation on it belongs to me or the Memphis Library Foundation. We hold it in public trust. Mm. It's your money.
Okay.
So we hold it for the public's benefit and we spend it in line with our mission. And that's the law. I actually had a new board member join the board not too long ago, and during the orientation, I always give new board members it's like a little booklet from the Secretary of State. You can go on their website. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, nonprofit governance and what every board member should know, which literally has all the legal stuff about what it means to be a nonprofit board member. And he said, I've been on a lot of boards and nobody has ever given me this.
You want them to know, huh?
Yeah, I want them to know. Because they're on my team. And yes. If they're not doing the things that they are required to do, mm-hmm. our entire mission is in jeopardy. Yeah. So I think that in those ways, practicing law has been a huge benefit. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I'll say is lawyers tend to be rebellious and go rogue and think outside the box. Mm-hmm. So in my role, which is ironic, by the way, because the law you'd think creates a box, mm-hmm. but it doesn't. It just gives us a way to think about how to get outside the box legally, right?
Mm, yes.
So we can think differently about how a library can operate and support those kind of really outside the box ideas that library staffers have. We want to support big ideas. Mm-hmm. If we're going to keep being innovative, the most innovative public library system in the country, mm-hmm. we need to support that, and we need to inspire library staffers to realize they can do more.
Yeah,
that we trust them. They're the ones who are working with those members of the community every day. We have libraries embedded in neighborhoods. Every neighborhood of Memphis is unique.
It is.
It's so unique.
It is, especially downtown Memphis.
Shoot. Well, it's not even really kind of a neighborhood. You know, you're
right.
This library is so different than, you know, something like the Cornelia Crenshaw branch. Mm-hmm. Not very far away, right? Just right on Vance Avenue. Mm-hmm. Not very far away. Completely different.
I have never been there.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that library. It's not that far from my house in Midtown. Mm-hmm. So I used to just go there and hang out in there after I started working. I hadn't been before I started working for the Library Foundation. But after that, I'd go and just bring my laptop and work in there, because it's just like gives me the warm fuzzies. I love the smell of a library too.
You love the smell.
I do.
What does it smell like?
It smells like books.
A fresh book.
Yes.
An old book.
Kind of
freshy.
A mix of both. I mean, anybody mm-hmm. who's walked into a library that has a bunch of books knows mm-hmm. what a library smells like. CASA doesn't have that many books.
That's true.
As compared to other branches.
That's
because
true.
It's just designed differently with performance spaces and, yeah. you know, photography spaces and podcasting spaces, yes. and cafe.
I love CASA Library.
I love it too.
Yes. What do you want the verbally effective audience to know about why they should support their local libraries?
I'm really glad you asked that, because some people, sometimes the feedback I get is, you know, I don't really need the library. I'm just going to buy a book on Amazon, or, you know, my kids go to private school and they have a robotics team and a 3D printers and all of those things.
Exactly.
And so what I would say is, first of all, go in the library anyway, because there is something for everyone. Mm-hmm. You may not need a robotics team for your kid, but why would you not want to go hear Joyce Cobb sing?
Okay. You know, like you're not going to get that right? everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. You just walk in the library and have access to all of that, arts and culture and all of that. And it brings people together. We're in such a divisive time in history where we all kind of sit in our silos and scroll through our news feed, which is curated to us. Mm-hmm. And going into a library program brings you into spaces with people who are not like you and humanizes those people. And it's a lot harder to feel like you are seen as the other or they are the other if you're in a space talking with somebody.
I agree.
So that public space aspect, go to the library. But the other thing that I would say is a rising tide lifts all ships. You know, that adage of even if you really don't need the library, if people in your community need the library and you can support that, and, you know, it doesn't matter what you think they need. If they need education and literacy programs, if they need arts and culture, if they need STEM support, if they need inspiration, if they need, you know, whatever it is they need, the library's doing it. I guarantee you the library is doing it.
Yeah.
So supporting the library means supporting workforce development, crime reduction, opportunity youth engagement, early literacy programs for kids so they can be ready for school and meet that third grade reading benchmark that everybody's just been talking about for so many years.
Yes.
You know, you can support all of those things, mm-hmm. arts and culture, artists, by the way, and the ways in which the patrons of the arts, the customers, can enjoy the arts, all for free.
Free.
For free to you, but not free to do.
Right. Free to you, but not free to do.
That's right.
Wow. Well, Christine, you are absolutely amazing. Have I ever told you that? Like, I really look up to you.
Aw.
You are a boss.
Well, I feel the same way about you, let me tell you.
I appreciate that. Yeah. But I definitely look up to you. And we are actually at the end of Women's History Month.
Yes.
So many women have, you know, blaze trails along the way. Who have been some inspirational women along your journey?
Oh, wow. There's so many. So many. I think that, you know, my mom, we all go there, but I'm going to go there. My mom has always just been a strong woman and a strong presence in my life who throughout my life, childhood and beyond, has said, well, whatever, you just do what you want to do, and you can. And just supported that idea that whatever I want to do is within my reach. And I've really tried to parent my own kids that way because she did that for me. Mm-hmm. And what a privilege, because not everybody gets that. And just all of the strong women in my family, I actually think about both of my grandmothers and what they went through.
Oh, wow. Grandmothers have been through some ordeals.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of mine's a Holocaust survivor, right?
Yes.
She just died at 99.
Wow.
In February.
Really?
So, yes. Mm. Yes. And my grandfather, her husband, died at 104 in September. So, got some longevity there. But I think about what they were able to go through and how they just put one foot in front of the other anyway.
Yes.
And, you know, my mother's mother was obviously not a Holocaust survivor, but still, man, that was a hard life. And she couldn't just do the things she wanted to do, mm-hmm. but she did everything she could anyway within that structure. So I think about my ancestral women, if you will, as inspiration. But then as mentors, I would say I feel so fortunate that my first nonprofit boss, Dr. Kristen Anderson, I'm shouting her out.
Okay.
She was the vice president for advancement at Southern College of Optometry. Mm-hmm. And I had no business being hired in the job I got hired in. I was not qualified
she
on any
chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But she saw something and said, she can do this. She can create something for us that's important for us, but also she's gonna knock it out of the park. And then she supported me in doing what I wanted to do and really being able to explore how I could create the greatest impact with my own unique skills and gifts. And that's something that I really try to do, to emulate for the people, the women especially, who work for me. Because women, let me tell you,
We will sell ourselves short.
Yeah, we will sell ourselves short. But the truth is that I think most of the world would just shut down if we just took the day off, all of us at the same time.
We do
right?
a lot.
Okay. Right?
We do a lot.
We do. We do.
So I'm sure you see a lot of special talents and skills in women around you.
Oh, my gosh.
You just bring it out of them.
Yeah. Well, I just... All you got to do is ask them what they want to do and then give them the tools to do it. I mean, that's what Kristen did for me.
Yeah.
Best boss I ever had, other than myself. And love you, Kristen.
Yes. Shout out to Kristen Anderson
right.
out there.
Yeah. I don't know if she's going to, I'll make sure she listens.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're going to send her the link. We are definitely going to send her the link. Well, Christine Weinrich, I definitely enjoyed you today on the Verbally Effective podcast. It's been a pleasure to hear your story, lady.
Thank you.
And I'm sure you are going to inspire others and really get people to tap in into what all of the libraries out there have in store for just the public in general. Because
big
there's just so
coming.
Many innovative things
Always.
That are here.
Mm-hmm.
Some big things coming. You want to give us an exclusive drop today?
Well, I'll just say stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Are not resting on our laurels. We were most innovative a couple years ago, and we are going to be most innovative into the future.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Now, how can people continue to follow your journey? Mm-hmm. Can you give your socials
of course.
Out?
Yep. You can follow Memphis Library Foundation socials mm-hmm. as well, which we have them all. But then I also have my personal ones on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, you know, the usual suspects. And then you can also learn more about the Library Foundation and its work at memphislibraryfoundation.org. And if you want to check out something going on at your library, go to memphislibrary.org and look at the event calendar. And I strongly suggest you filter by location closest to you because it's mm-hmm. overwhelming. You cannot imagine the thousands of events happening at libraries in your
something.
City.
Yes. Well, Christine, thank you so much for joining me today on the Verbally Effective podcast. You were an amazing guest. You are indeed verbally effective. Will I say that? Yes. And thank you all for tuning in yet again to another episode. I definitely want you to hit that follow, subscribe button on all social media platforms, especially that Ina Esco YouTube channel as well. Thanks again for tuning in to the Verbally Effective podcast.